the People Sports 5th podcast episode, we are joined by former MMA 1 Championship CEO, proud Edmontonian, and now the Edmonton Elks President and CEO, Victor Cui. Kumusta, sir?
Kumusta? Good to see you, man.
So growing up, you lived in Ghana. How important was the African country in your life?
Oh, I mean, that was the early part of my childhood. And I got there from the ages, I think, 5 till about 12. So all of my childhood memories are of Africa. And I still have several friends that I went to school with in Africa. One of my friends even flew out to Asia several times to visit me when I was with one championship. And so a ton of memories there.
And when your Lolo told you, by the time you need a relationship, it's already too late to build one, how did you know you were making relationships with the right people?
That's a great question. You don't know, actually. And I guess that's one of the magics of relationship, is that if you make yourself open to relationships, you lead a very different life because you meet a lot of different people. But if you leave yourself closed to new experiences and closed to relationships, you also have another different life and different types of experiences. And I have just been so lucky in my life. It just seems that every step that I go, I meet some great people that, you know, it might not be obvious that day or that week or that year, but you end up doing something years down the road. Like I was saying, I've got friends that I went to school with in Africa. And then 40 years later, we're hanging out together in Singapore. And those are the kind of things that I think really make life beautiful.
And in the beginning for you, from being a junior manager at the Commonwealth Games in Malaysia, did you ever think about becoming a CEO?
At that time, I don't think I really understood what that meant. I was just happy to be working in sports. I was happy to have a career that let me travel around the world. And that was probably of a much more priority in my life, traveling and just working in sports. And I knew I wanted to advance my career. I always had an entrepreneur sort of side hustle going on of different initiatives and things, but never in my mind in those early days said, oh yeah, I got to be a CEO. That wasn't my goal. It was more, I was pursuing opportunities and experiences.
And when you were with ESPN looking for the next $1 billion opportunity, how did you decide to leave and create your own company?
Well, that one was really at the intersection of, you know, I'd say hard work and luck and faith, where I met Chatri Sityotong, who was the first investor in one championship. And he happens to be one of those men, probably one of the very few people in the world, that was a successful entrepreneur, a successful Wall Street corporate guy, and loves martial arts. And so there was... he had this intersection where it all kind of came together, and he understood exactly what I was talking about when I talked about creating a global sport property. And, you know, at that time, initially with ESPN. So I was just really lucky to meet him and learn from him. He's got a phenomenal depth of experience through a lot of different industries. And so he was a great mentor.
So a big recurring theme that I'm getting right now is people and luck. Does luck come to everybody?
I think there is always luck. You do need luck in life. And there's people say, oh, you create your own luck or you work for those opportunities. That part of it is true. You have to be ready to accept the right things and the right opportunities and be brave enough to accept those things. But you also have to be brave enough to reject things, because sometimes it is as your path is determined as much by what things you choose not to do as it is of the things that you do choose. So what friends do you choose not to spend time with? And what friends do you choose to spend time with? What opportunities do you keep yourself open to? And then that consequently means, what other opportunities do you turn away? So I have friends that went down very different paths and great lives, and I went down my own path. And that's because you each make your own decisions of what you want to embrace.
And with that, in that moment, with hindsight being 2020, how do you know whether to reject something or accept something in that moment?
That is harder when you're younger. I think as you get older, and that's part of the reason why I think it's important when you're younger, not to so much just formulate what do you want, because when you decide what you want, it's so big. It's important to understand what do you not like and what things do you want to stay away from. So earlier, you're just figuring that out in life. What things that you don't like? Oh, you're like, oh, I hate working 20-hour days. Or maybe you're like, oh, I love working 20-hour days, right? So you got to figure that out. And then as you get older, you sort of, I think experience allows you to look at those opportunities and understand where on that spectrum of your interest does that start to fall and decide, do you pursue them or not?
And with all those hashtag daily motivation posts that you do, how important are those for keeping you motivated?
Well, I do them also because for me, it's amazing that there's other successful entrepreneurs in the world that write biographies and they share their entire story. And why I find that amazing is because they share their failures and their successes. So how I look at it is they're giving you a cheat code. Like I post those motivational things because I look at it as a cheat code from very successful people that of what they have learned and figured out. So if I can keep on taking and learning from them, then I can hopefully avoid that exact same problem that they faced and learn from their experiences. So motivation is part of it, but it's more understanding and taking advantage of the information that they are willing to share.
And with you getting in such a big position, do you ever find yourself losing motivation sometimes?
Yeah, that's normal. Every day, every day, every week, things can throw you for a loop, and that's life. Now, it's impossible to run if on a scale of 1 to 10, to be sprinting at 10 every single day. There's nobody that can do that. If they tell you they're doing that, that's not true. That's, we're not Superman or Superwoman or whatever. You are going to have these dips and valleys. But the key is to give yourself a trend line that is increasing. So what can you do successfully and habitually on a day-to-day basis, regardless of how you feel, that puts you on this path of trajectory for growth? And some days you will overachieve and some days you'll underachieve. But as long as you're mindful that the trend line is upwards.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that. And when you filled a stadium with 12,000 people determined to prove people wrong with your experience, when do you know that, okay, it's okay to be wrong?
Well, I think it's okay to be wrong every single day. I probably make more mistakes than any person. If you are talking to someone who says that they don't make any mistakes and they've never been wrong, that means they probably are clueless and they're making all the wrong mistakes. Or they've just never pushed the boundaries enough of their life, of where they're taking risks. And if you take risks and you challenge yourself, you will fail and you will make those mistakes. If you look at an athlete gets to where they're at because every day they're failing. Every day they're making mistakes that they're trying to overcome and get. There's not a single athlete that his path is filled with 100% wins. That doesn't exist. So it doesn't exist in life, in business, in your own personal goals. You have to expect to fail. And then the question is, well, what are you taking from those failures? What are you changing? How are you growing? What can you learn? If all you do is accept the failure and you don't learn anything, then it is a failure. I think the interesting part for me is doing things, failing, and then figuring out how the next time I do it, I fail less.
And with that, when you were trying to get a deal with ABS-CBN, a Filipino network, and got rejected by so many people, how do you not be discouraged and quit your idea when so many others didn't see the value in it?
Oh yeah, I was discouraged. But make no mistake, it's discouraging. People telling you that your dream is unreasonable, people telling you that it doesn't make any sense, people just outright rejecting you, like ABS-CBN did the first time, like it's disheartening, and it makes you question yourself. It makes you be filled with doubt. But here's the thing, is if you do what everybody else does, you get what everyone else gets. That's the saying. If you do what everyone else does, you get what everyone else gets. But when you do what nobody else is doing, everyone else questions you because you're taking a different path. So you either have to have the strength and grit to believe in what you're doing and go, or you get pulled back by the masses into what they want. Now, the people that are pulling you back and asking you to do what they are all doing, they're not evil. It's just that they have their lens of what they believe can be achieved. And so they want to give you advice, which seems logical to them, and bring you into their world. But if you want to do something that they're not doing, you have to expect that they won't understand it. You have to expect that they will be confused by your decisions. And I think you see that in life with all businesses that have done something different. And I'm not saying that I do anything dramatic. I'm not a successful entrepreneur like Steve Jobs or Elon Musk and those guys that have risked it all and taken everything. But you have to know that whatever path that you're on, if you don't believe in it, why should anybody else believe in it?
With that situation, do you ever look back and think, I showed you?
No, I don't have a lot of energy to waste on pushing people down so that I rise above them. I find that life gives you more success if you let go of those things and you say to ABS-CBN, you know what, let's rise together and let's work. Because everybody makes decisions that the best decisions that they can make at that time. From their perspective, they were making a right decision. So I could have also been wrong. It turns out that I was right, but I could have been wrong. So why should I blame them for holding on to that position, which was accurate at that time? Who would have known that One Championship would grow as big and as successful as it is? And in the Philippines, the One Championship brand is one of the most dominant brands in the Philippines today. Like, I walk in the airport of the Philippines and the passport guy sometimes doesn't even look at my passport. He's just starts talking to me and he recognizes me right away. So it's grown really to another level there that I never even dreamed of.
Talking about that growth, this is a quote from an article a few years back. Quote, "1FC, a company launched 3 years ago, now Asia's biggest MMA group for revenue. What did you have to overcome to do that so fast?"
Oh, well, I think first and foremost, you have to have a great board of directors that, we've got some of the brightest minds in the business and also a leadership team at One Championship that are the best in the world. These guys are experts, not just in sports business, but in their respective areas of marketing, sales, competition, all these kind of areas. They are literally the best in the world. So whatever problems come at them, at the organization, you've got this powerful mind meld of talented people that are able to find solutions. I think there's, Asia's a little bit different in that the scale of it is quite different. You're talking about one time zone that has over 2 billion people in one single time zone. It's very different than North America. So to achieve scalability, and if you can, is the prize at the end is almost much bigger in that way because there's just more people.
And to get 1FC to that point, what was your most difficult day on the job?
Most difficult day? Every day, and even today with this job at the Elks, every day I still feel like it's all going to get taken away. I don't know how to express it, but like every day I feel like this might be my last day and I might go bankrupt. Like this feeling that if I don't give it my best today, I might not succeed. And that might just be because I have been fighting so hard to work hard my entire life that I don't take it for granted. Maybe if I was in a place in life where things came easy to me, I would take it for granted. But today, that's how I feel every day. Like, I still feel that I have to work my very best or it's all going to fall apart.
Where does that come from? Is it doubt? Is it fear? Where does that come from for you?
I think it comes from not wanting to let myself down. I know what I look like at my very best, and I know what I look like at my very worst. And I don't like myself at my very worst. I love myself at my very best when I'm firing in all cylinders. And so I always want to try and achieve that. It's like, you know, if you play golf, that perfect swing and that perfect noise when the ball hits your club, or if you play tennis, when you hit it in the sweet spot and it's just like, bam, and you feel like you're Roger Federer. It's something that you want to chase. And that's what I feel when I'm operating on all cylinders of the best. And I love that feeling. I chase that every day.
And you're a big person about hard work, of course. Kind of the same thing. But how do you know you're working hard enough?
I don't know. I think I've probably been very lucky in that I'm just, I don't say this as like false humility, but I'm just not very smart. I'm average, you know, maybe a little bit above average, but I learn really, really fast. So you can put me in situations where I don't know anything and I can absorb information maybe a lot faster than the people around me. And part of that just comes from my focus on hard work. And I think if I was younger and all things came easy to me, I wouldn't know what it feels like to work hard. But even as a young athlete, when I was in school, I didn't have the natural abilities that my best friends had, but I could get closer or beat them if I trained harder, because they didn't have to train hard because they just had their natural abilities. And so I've taken that mentality and training and applied that throughout my life.
And it's sometimes hard being Filipino too. Can, you know, we're short too.
Exactly. Exactly.
And what was the life experience that you learned the most from?
I'd say being in the Navy and the Naval Reserves was a big part of my formative years, because I joined when I was 18. Those friends and the training that the military puts you through really ingrained in my mind a lot of stress management practices of like how to deal with logic and problems and physical and mental stress was a really big learning lesson for me.
And as a CEO, you probably met many other leaders and CEOs. What is the biggest similarity between you all, and what's the difference between you from them?
I think similarity is I've never met a CEO or a successful person that has said, I was just like sitting at home watching Star Trek, eating potato chips, doing nothing. And then blam, success landed on my lap and I became super successful. I was like, I don't know what I was doing. I was just sitting at home, nothing. And it just dropped on me magically. I've never met a successful person that's ever said that. Everyone has consistently said they struggled, they took risks, they worked harder than everybody else to get where they're at. I'd say the difference is I have a very high pain threshold for stress than the average person. I tend to, as people get more stress around me, I get more calm, and it allows me to relax and make better decisions. And that is an important part of leadership, of being able to have clarity and in your decision-making at the key critical points. Everybody can make decision-making when you have time and when all the facts are there and when you're in control of everything. But can you make the right decisions when you only have 30% of the information? It's easy to make the right decision when you've got 90% of the information, but in real life, that doesn't happen. In the entrepreneur world, you've got to make decisions quite often as a leader when you don't have, you might have less than half of the information, and you have to be confident in your decision of what you're doing based on that set of information.
In terms of intelligence, that's kind of crazy to me. Like, compared to book smart, that's kind of next level to me.
I wouldn't say next level. You have to, in life, find the balance between quantitative and qualitative analysis. Some people, if maybe you're more creative, you end up to be more qualitative. If you're mathematical and logical driven, then you're more quantitative. If you work at both, you're able to get a good balance and move seamlessly between the two.
Mm-hmm. And in 2018, you did an interview where you were asked when you got your first big break. You said you still haven't got it yet. Do you think you have now?
I think that today with the Edmonton Elks and with One Championship, I feel very grateful for everything that has, the opportunities have come to me. I think the big break that I'm looking for and that I'm waiting for is probably something around my family and my children. Like, when my daughter becomes a professional athlete and the number one golfer or the number one athlete in the world, then I might consider that as my big break and feel very lucky. But until then, I'm just going to keep grinding.
So are you ever satisfied?
No, it's not being about satisfied, because that implies you're unsatisfied and you're just, chasing and not appreciative and not grateful for what you have. I'd say that it's just that I'm not content. Like, I always want to challenge myself more and grow more.
Mm-hmm. And with the experience you've described, traveling around the world, living in Asia for 17 years, as an Edmontonian myself, why did you decide to come back?
It's one of the best cities in the world to live in. Great people. It's a great place to live, safe, beautiful, clean, and also just my brother is still here. It's where my father and my mother have a lot of friends. So there's deep connections in the community. Like, I get a chance to reconnect with people that I knew 30 years ago when I was in high school or when I was in university. And you only really get that when you move back to where you grew up.
From the monetary standpoint, when you turn something to $1 billion, why do you leave that?
I guess I've never chased money. Money isn't what I've looked for. I've looked to find people that I can surround myself that are going to push me and teach me. And I've looked for opportunities that are in line with my values and my passion of life. So, you could make a lot of money being a criminal on Wall Street, if you wanted to, right? You could choose to dedicate your efforts to that. Or you could dedicate your efforts to building a business or being with an NGO, with a charity, or working United Nations. And for me, it's always been about finding great people that are in line with the passions that I love. And the passions that I love are around sports.
With sports, as a CEO of the Elks, how does one's influence for the team, the fans, the players, how does that result into winning on the field?
Well, a big part of that is Coach Jones and what he's going to do to build a winning team. And then beyond that, it's about how are you able to make a brand and a team that everybody has pride in? Because there is a magical, unmeasurable element from fans, from the energy that comes from fans, from the belief in the brand or the belief in your team. And that stuff happens off the field. And when the players feel that magic in the city, when the players feel the power of the brand and that the Edmontonians and the city embraces them, they take that energy onto the field. So they work hand in hand, like yin and yang.
And hundreds of messages from fans, 42 days on the job today, and sleep for the week.
Good tracking there. Yeah, no, it's good. I mean, I'm still keeping a good balance between my family and my kids and work, but definitely it's been working really hard, but I'm enjoying it.
And what has been your favorite part of the job so far?
I think interacting with long-term fans. I mean, these are fans that have had tickets for 30 years, 40, 50 years, and just hearing their experiences, what they love about it, what the brand means to them. And it reminds me that I'm putting in work not just for this season or for this year. I'm putting in work for this decades of a legacy of these people that love the organization.
With that legacy, for example, that new partnership with the Golden Bears, and now, what was the biggest reason to go back to the Double E helmets?
The Double E is what it represents. It re represents our history, our pride, our legacy. It's not about the design and the sticker on the helmet. We could do anything. It was really to me about tipping my hat, in a respectful way to our alumni, to previous players, to shareholders, and anyone that's contributed to this legacy that I have been allowed to shepherd today.
And still on that legacy with the players, with the alumni, with the fans, where do you feel is the most pressure where you have to perform on your job?
Well, I feel the most pressure with that. I look at that every day and I think, wow, that's 56,000 seats. That means you have to put one person in every single seat. And I look at that every day, and it's a reminder of me of how much work we got to do.
Of course, of course. And switching on a more personal side, with all you've done, what's one of your biggest regrets in life?
I haven't spent a lot of time stewing on regrets. I think there are things that I try and course correct, but regrets is like this is kind of wasted energy, what are you going to do thinking about that? Either do something or you don't on it.
And what was one of the happiest days of your life?
Oh, that's a tough one. I'd say definitely when my daughter was born and my son was born, those were two pretty magical days. Getting married was probably another one, I would say. Finding out that my dad survived his heart attack was probably another really great day. So things like that.
With happy, what was the saddest day of your life?
Saddest. Oh, I've had a lot. I've had a lot of sad days, I think. When the passing of my grandparents, the passing of my in-laws, they both lived with us in Asia. I think that's some of the more recent ones. This COVID period, we had a lot of relatives that we knew. I think about 18 people that I know died of COVID. It's in the last 2 years, so quite a lot.
I'm sorry to hear that. For our last question, what's one quote that has stuck with you in life?
Well, you said the earlier quote, that even best friends were strangers at one point. You never know where things are going to start, as I think is one of them. One of the other favorite quotes that I have from university is "Nothing in the world beats persistence." And I'd say that's probably two of my favorites.
Yeah, that's all for questions. Thank you so much, Tito, for spending time and talking with me today and taking time out of your busy day to do this.
Yeah, no, thanks, man. I really appreciate it. And good luck with your podcast. And I'm really just proud to be supporting the Filipino community.
Yeah, from watching all your posts and just looking at your passion, I'm proud. I'm happy to see that you're in that position, but I'm even more proud to see somebody that looks like me in that position.
Thanks, brother. I appreciate it.
Episode 6 coming soon. Peace. Mm-hmm.